The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hey, David and Chaz, this is Darren from Rhode Island. This harkens back to your episode about surfboard racks. Everybody I know that surfs, you stuff the board in the car. And it's great until you have to travel with your family, at which point the kids have their faces stuffed against the glass and boards on top of their heads, such as the case when we go to Cape Cod. Got to bring the boards. There's going to be waves. Of course, unfortunately, you put the boards in the car and you forget the pack and play. So my little girl had no place to sleep when we got to Cape Cod, forgot her bed. The child did not have a bed. But to solve that, we ended up pulling a drawer out of a dresser, stuffing a comforter in there, and she didn't sleep at all. Didn't work. But we had the boards. You guys are great. Love the show. And keep up the good work. Later.
Hey, listening to The Grit right now. Hey, FYI, if you work at a grocery store, 95% of the grocery store is already unionized. It's the UFCW, so those shopping cart pushers are already members of a union. And I thought it's kind of ironic that Chaz is looking out for the working man, coming from a man who doesn't work that much. Love you guys. Keep up the good work. Adios and aloha.
I mean, I was thinking about it. I was thinking about how much I would love to be a grocery shopping cart pusher. You clock in, you clock out, go home. You don't think about pushing that shopping cart anymore. So you go back the next day, right? It doesn't follow you around.
Yeah.
I work 24 hours a day. I am working when I wake up in the morning and there's some bit of surf news that I got to get up. I am working midday when there's some other bit of surf news, and working at 10:30 at night when Derek Riley calls me with more surf news. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Our listener does not know your plight nor appreciate it.
He doesn't. He should come. I mean, he should walk one day in my Louis Vuitton loafers and see how it feels.
And what's worse, what's worse is trying to stay on top of surf news and also write books along the way, squeezing that in.
Exactly. How do I do that? Now I have a whole new thing that I'm doing, a whole new thing, which is also becoming another book.
And there's no way to unionize. You're by yourself. You're an island.
I try to regularly unionize with myself, and it gets rejected. It gets rejected before it even gets a hearing.
You're in a constant state of litigation and debate with yourself.
I mean, it's just, it's enough to drive a man mad, I'll tell you, this surf journalism life. So, well, yeah.
I feel like the listeners need to really appreciate your heavy lifting.
I feel they should. I feel that they could set up a GoFundMe for my personal unionization.
So I think in the new world order that we're already kind of living in, that sort of the nebulous job description is going to have more value than anything else. And I should probably define it as like having creative some sort of creativity and also leadership skills and kind of be able to manage your own time and lead into some new path, those things will always have, you can find a way to make a living because you can access your audience directly, you can monetize directly, all that sort of stuff. Or employers value those things in people no matter what. And those are traits that you can't necessarily teach. So if you have them, they're really valuable. Whereas if you go down the path of the school teaching you a skill, then you're going to be replaceable. And not only replaceable by, you know, outsourcing to other countries, but replaceable by robots and automation.
You know what skill I sort of sometimes wish that I had though?
What?
Basic thing, plumbing. I wish I knew how to plumb well, or building. Things you do with your hands. That's never going to go out of fashion either, is it? Machinery.
I paid a plumber $200 yesterday.
Imagine if you could have paid yourself that. Take yourself out to a nice meal.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Well, there's still time. You can learn how to plumb.
Plumbing is the one thing that I generally refuse to outsource, where I will tear any pipes, sink, toilet, anything apart just on principle, not because I don't want to pay a plumber, but I just always have I don't think I can ever understand anything, right? Like everything is way too complex for my surf journalism brain to understand. Plumbing, I feel there's a root cause that you can get to, either a clog in the thing, or I just replace the cartridge on my faucet handle. You know, faucet handles have cartridges.
No idea.
Weird. Just replace that. I'm a plumber. Pay me next time, David Lee.
The problem is you're going to end up paying them to replace all the work that you dismantled, you know?
I know. It's true.
I also don't want to deal with feces. Ever.
I don't mind feces. I feel that when you're getting in the muck, it might as well really be muck.
Heck no. I have no place for muck in my life. I've outgrown muck. I'll pay for somebody else to handle the muck. So we have huge news, by the way, huge news coming out of Tahiti this morning. In a message to, this is an article on Beach Grip from Derek Riley. And he wrote, in a message to competitors from the WSL's head of competition, Jesse Miley Dyer. So I presume that one of the competitors sent this to Derek. Jesse Miley Dyer's quote is, quote, wanted to make you all aware of the latest information coming out of Tahiti. There's currently a press conference happening in real time or about to happen saying that they are closing the border on Sunday. It's unclear what this means for us at the moment, but the team is going to work on getting clarity tonight. We're getting the information. We're going to get some more information right now. Please give us another night to gather what's happening. We'll hopefully have an update for you tomorrow evening. So that would be tonight, this evening. The WSL should be making a statement as to whether or not the border closure in Tahiti will affect them or if the actual border closure is going to happen. But what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, to be frank, I was super duper impressed with the World Surf League for being able to get it off in Barra. I thought there was no way with the closures in Oaxaca and, you know, assuaging surfers' doubts and all this kind of stuff, travel concerns. I thought there was absolutely no way that they...
It's fun, right? Like, so I thought, oh, maybe the snake bit, perpetually snake bit WSL is finally not snake bit. But now it looks like back the old WSL, where this is clearly out of their control, but screwed.
You broke up there just a little bit in the middle of that, but I got most of it.
Yeah.
You're fine. I think you're back now. Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of it is out of their hands and out of their control this year because of COVID. And I really feel like at this point, I guess, my stance has changed a lot throughout the year, but I feel at this point, the world is going to reopen. We're going to have to learn how to run our businesses with COVID existing. And so there needs to be protocols in place for how to run in a bubble or contingency plans, you know, like what will they do another event in Mexico? Maybe if Tahiti gets canceled, can they stay in Mexico, go over to Puerto Escondido, something like that? Those types of contingency plans need to be put in place by the WSL because it's almost certain that things aren't going to go according to plan.
Moving forward with the Delta variant and all the other variants, I mean, this thing, right? Like seeing schools opening up again in total chaos and flux, or the possibility, right? Where it seemed like when we ended last or started the summer, school's out, it seemed like we're going to be back to normal finally in the fall, right? Chaos again, abject chaos, right? Like nobody knows what's going to happen. Are schools actually going to open, masking, you know, a whole nine, back to chaos. Schools can't have, I suppose, a real plan A, plan B, but the WSL theoretically could. So I would think next year, you'd almost have to have two whole slates of possible contest locations and or contest sort of in a bubble like they did in Australia this year, I suppose, or have that as a contingency.
Yeah. It also, I mean, I don't want to restate something we've been saying all along, but there really, this should be an interim world title, you know, like this really, and given that not only is it different than every other year that we've had before, but it's also abbreviated. Like there's fewer contests. They're not in the same variety of waves that we've had before. So it really doesn't vet out the actual best surfer in the world. I think the one saving grace here is that Gabriel Medina is so dominant that he's kind of, he would have won this year probably no matter where they would have done the events. But what are your thoughts on, so if Tahiti doesn't happen, what should they do? I mean, should they just say, okay, well, that Mexico's the final event of the season, we have our top five and we'll see you at Lowers, or should they try to squeeze in another event?
No, I mean, I think that's what they should do. And they should honestly call the title this year the inaugural CJ Hobgood World Title.
I like it. In honor of CJ.
In honor of CJ, in memoriam of CJ Hobgood. And just call, you know, just call it what it is. Like there's no way to squeeze another one in and get everybody to trestles. Just let everybody get to trestles, run your five man final, and whoever wins is the CJ Hobgood winner.
I've got a pitch for you. What about send the entire tour to trestles, run an entire event there, then get a top five from that and send the top five to Indo or some other location for the finals day?
Fantastic idea, David Lee Scales. I really like it.
Thank you. I just came up with it.
Yeah. Even if you sent the entire tour to trestles, ran it at trestles, and then had the final 5 day at trestles, that would also work.
Yeah, I agree. We need another event, you know, like another event to fully vet out like the math or for the math to fully work.
How many events was there total this year?
I don't have it in front of me. I could look it up. It'll take a second.
There was four in Australia.
There was one at Pipe.
One at Pipe. That's five.
Surf Ranch would be six.
Oh, Surf Ranch.
I know.
That's it. Barra.
So Barra is a better Surf Ranch. I mean, it kind of goes without, we probably don't need to state it, but it offers exactly what Surf Ranch offers in terms of how you can showcase that style of surfing. It's a similar platform, but it's infinitely more exciting, obviously, because it's unpredictable. And it's better. It's not as perfect, but it's better. You know, like you don't need both spots on tour. And if you're going to have one, you got to pick Barra, obviously.
Now that the Barra was destroyed as a pristine little reserve, thanks to Rip Curl, I don't know why they don't put Barra on tour every year.
I don't either. I think maybe because they had Snapper forever. You know, Snapper was kind of the alternative.
But Barra's better than Snapper.
I don't know about that. And if you're already going to be in Australia, it's just easier to do one, you know, at Snapper.
Sure, but I think good Barra is better than good Snapper.
I don't know. It's a tough call.
I think bad Barra is better than bad Snapper.
Argument could be made. It's a tough call. I don't necessarily agree, but I don't have any skin in that game or heart for it. So I don't really care either. So let's say Tahiti does go. Obviously, Gabriel Medina is out because he's not vaccinated. And you have to quarantine for 10 days once you get there for the unvaccinated. And so Gabe said he's not going to get the vaccine. He's not going to go. Who else do you think is unvaxxed and would no-show in Tahiti because of it?
Well, here's the strange thing. It would appear Kelly Slater himself, except for, wouldn't it be just a Kelly mind game to sort of claim that he wasn't and then just show up in Tahiti like, what? Never said nothing about nothing.
Did he claim that he's not vaxxed?
He did. He early on, I mean, he didn't claim he wasn't, but he did say, talk about how, I don't know, quoted the Pfizer doctor dude or the head of Pfizer who had the quote, like, we've never done anything like this, right? Like this mass test on millions and millions of healthy people with this vaccine, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it heavily, heavily hinted that Kelly Slater was not vaccinated.
Kelly, he also said that he'd rather wait for his to get the coronavirus and for his antibodies to serve as a defense against whatever, rather than get the vaccine. So he didn't say he didn't get it, but he implied that he didn't want to get it.
Precisely, but wouldn't that be oh so Kelly to imply these things and then just show up ready to go in Chopu, ready to slide in? I mean, I called it. I said Kelly is going to do very well at Barra. He's going to do very well at Chopu, slide into the top five, and there we go. And so that's how he's going to throw shade on the Olympics.
It'd be incredible. So what would be incredible is if Kelly actually doesn't believe in vaccines, but gets the vax just because he's that competitive. Like if his ideology, if his competitive streak is more powerful than his ideology, that's pretty amazing. Because for Gabriel, it's not. Gabriel's like, no, it does. Well, I guess Gabe's in first, so he doesn't need it anyways.
But yeah, Gabriel just doesn't need it. The war inside Kelly, it's a lot like the union war inside myself. But imagine, you're exactly right. The fight between ideology and competitiveness. But for Kelly, I don't know how ideological Kelly is, because his ideology seems like it's based on sort of a lot of random. I think he thinks he's smart. And I think he thinks he's well thought and well read. But from the direct portal into the mind of Kelly Slater that we have via Instagram, it's sort of all over the map.
I mean, I'm going to take Kelly's stance. I'm going to take Kelly's side on this one. I think the fact that it's all over the map is the sign of a critical thinker. I think Kelly is, whether or not he's smart, you know, I'm not going to necessarily comment on, but I think that he's constantly questioning, constantly searching, constantly engaging, constantly reading up on stuff. And when you do that and you gain new information, then you change your mind about things. And the ability to change one's mind is actually a sign probably of intelligence, or certainly of critical thinking, you know?
But I will say, I will counter argue that I think Kelly knows a lot of, you know, famous scientists and writers and whatever, right? Kelly has access to them. Therefore, I think Kelly thinks he knows a lot more than he does, because he has access to people who have, you know, done whatever thinking they've done. And so Kelly thinks, I think I've done that too. Like, I know these people, I can reach out to these people. Therefore, my brain has wrestled with these issues, where I don't know that it always has.
I like that about him. And
I mean, sure, it's great. It makes for great, great entertainment.
I think the problem for him is being a public figure and posting about it. Then people identify you as this thing. And then it's hard for the actual viewers or your fans to then change, to accept that you've changed your opinion ultimately.
I mean, I hope that Kelly never, ever stops. I love his public, thinking in public is entertaining.
What about,
I
noticed Derek just posted that video from Rhythmia, the retreat down in Costa Rica from 4 years ago. I don't know if Derek, I didn't actually open the article. And so I don't know if Derek just saw that video, but we had a bunch of people sending it to me or probably us 4 years ago. There's a retreat down in Costa Rica that does like spiritual healing with ayahuasca. And Kelly went down there and then did a testimonial video for the retreat to use as a promotional video. And it really didn't get much publicity at the time. And I don't think I even discussed it on the podcast, because I don't know. I just felt like, I don't know why I didn't discuss it actually, but we can discuss it now. Kelly doesn't say that he did ayahuasca, but he says that he had he was at that retreat and he said that he had a profound experience that has opened
doors opening.
To new portals and stuff like that. And I remember at that time I was kind of tracking his behavior, and I don't know if this was when he injured his foot in Jay Bay, or maybe, yeah, it might've been related to that. So he had a bunch of downtime and that's when he went and did it. But then he and his girlfriend of long, you know, 10 years, Kalani Miller, were, they basically looked like they had broken up. And again, we had a bunch of people, listeners, being like, hey, I searched through her messages or through her photos. And like the last time they were seen together was this, she hasn't posted in 3 months. And all there was all of this conspiracy theory. So it's like, oh, so did Kelly have go on a walkabout and a spiritual journey? And now he's rethinking everything. And ultimately he came back shortly thereafter. And then of course, returned to competition and all of that. But the fact that he puts it out there, you know what I mean? Like the fact that he goes and does ayahuasca and then puts it out there publicly is fascinating.
But it's also, yeah, so Derek geniusly put that article up 4 years ago or whenever it was and reconstituted it again as—
Got it.
As, is this why Kelly Slater at 50 is, you know, on the cusp of potentially, or some of the best surfing in a long time, right? I mean, his surfing at Barra has been nothing short of phenomenal, right?
It's close to phenomenal. I don't think it's phenomenal. I think it's good, but it's not Pete Kelly.
It's not Pete Kelly, but it's really great surfing. I mean, he's at 50. He is right in the mix there. Totally. And so Derek geniusly pointing back to an ayahuasca journey as, is this what happened? Did Kelly open the portals of his mind, which is why he's still surfing so well at 50?
So, you know, one thing I hear everybody talk about with hallucinogens is a rethinking and re-understanding of time and the way that time works. And so it could be the fountain of youth, you know, like you can regress your aging, you can connect with ancestors of the past, all that sort of stuff. That could be Kelly's secret.
Does it surprise you that Kelly did ayahuasca?
No, not at all.
Yeah, there's zero surprise there to me. Like Kelly Slater and his best friend, Joe Rogan, sort of seem like two peas or the flip side of a same coin, right? Where Rogan is into guns and whatnot, Kelly is into, I don't know, what would the alternative to
surfboards?
Yeah, whatever. Like that, Rogan is more masculine, Kelly is more feminine, but they are quintessentially the same.
Yeah. Kelly, I was watching that Brad Gerlach conversation with Kelly like 2 weeks ago, and Kelly looked like the youngest he's looked in.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was putting a Snapchat filter on his video or whatever, but like he looked like 10 years younger than he's looked. Yeah. So I don't know what he's doing, but keep it up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Kelly, did you see the, I can't remember who did it, the coronavirus Kelly meme?
No. Oh, yes, something. Yes. Survival League.
Yeah, Survival League was so funny.
I know.
Oh, it was very really funny.
Yeah. So a couple of other things. Are you watching the Mexico event?
Some, not as much as I should. I'm on a new journey myself, speaking of ayahuasca.
Oh, tell me.
I'm on a ballet journey here, David Lee Scales.
What in tarnation?
Ballet journey. The best thing ever, man. Best thing ever. Yeah. Daughter is on a full new path, like a serious ballet. No kidding around anymore. Like, and so I'm in the studio like hours a day watching her get whipped.
So you're watching ballet. You're not actually participating.
No, I'm not. Unlike Kelly Slater, my competitive days are behind me. But yeah,
it's the
most beautiful thing on earth.
Hold on.
The French government has placed French Polynesia under due to COVID-19. Obviously, we're very disappointed, but it's really important that we keep those communities safe. It's also worth noting, we did give the surfers on the event side a heads up yesterday. This is going to be our final event for the 2021 regular season for the championship tour. We're still going to have the finals, and we are going to have some updated qualification scenarios for the top five and for requalification for the next season. And then, I just want to say thank you to everybody for supporting WSL and for supporting pro surfing.
Did you hear that?
So I sure Jesse did, but what Jesse the heck Miley, does that mean though?
Jesse Miley Dyer just called off the Tahiti event officially.
What the heck do the updated scenarios mean? Does that mean they're going to run something? It seemed like they're going to run something for the bubble, for the cup.
I have no idea, but she did say, it might've been before the volume got to you, that This will be the final event in Mexico, and we will do the 5-person finals day at lower still.
But then there'll be other scenarios for I think those who want to qualify for next year. So I wonder, do you think that nobody gets cut this year?
That would be wise.
I mean, it's,
if nobody gets cut, then how do they remedy the people who qualified via the QS?
Well, I wonder if you have enough attrition, like Mikey Wright's already gone, right?
Right.
You got a bunch of folk retiring. You got Julian gone. And all of those slots just get filled with the people who qualified.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it would have to just be the right number of people who retired. You know, 10 people happen to retire so that the 10 new people can get bumped up.
I mean, it seems like there's close to 10 though, right?
Close to, I mean, it, for sure. So by the way, what do you think is behind the mass exodus?
I mean, I think people are just, it's interesting, right?
It really is.
I think one thing is that the quality of waves have been way, way worse. I think these surfers all, like Jeremy Flores, for example, right? This talked about yesterday, Jeremy Flores retiring, talked yesterday about how it's hard for him to get excited to surf bad waves anymore, right? But if it was the Dream Tour still, I think all these guys stay. 100%. If you're honestly surfing Cloudbreak and, you know, the best waves in the world, then as a surfer, you stay. I think the competitive side is not as fun to these guys. They've already made, I mean, this, that batch of surfers who's retiring now came from the golden era, right? These are the guys who are making millions of dollars or at least over $1 million a year, which surfers today don't make. And so these guys are financially set. Why chase the tour if you're not that competitive and not going to win? Like Jeremy Flores and probably Julian Wilson at this point, no, they're never going to win a title. They're looking at years and years of Brazil. And so not only are the waves in bad places or worse places, you are not going to be competitive. So then, you know, if you're financially set, if you have to make money on tour, then you chase the tour, I think, anymore, right?
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think it is a confluence of things, but at the center of it is the tour doesn't offer enough incentive. You know, like Mikey Wright, like Jeremy Flores, Julian Wilson, they're shifting into the next phase of their life. They have kids. And so, yeah, surfing crappy waves isn't as appealing. And they probably have accepted what you said, that they're not going to win a world title. So what is the point? But for somebody like Mikey Wright, he's thinking, I can make just as much money not being on tour. So what are you guys really offering me at this point? And there was a great post from Trax Magazine about a week ago. And it showed him getting just absolutely shacked on this keg of a wave that looked like the box, but bigger than the box, bigger and like just amplified, like as wide, but just bigger. And the caption said something to the effect of, this happened on finals day during the Rottnest event, right around the corner, around the island from Rottnest, from the contest site. And so If you're a surfer, you really have to ask yourself, who won that day? Like, did Gabriel Medina win because he did a bunch of turns on a crappy left and he won $100,000? Or did Mikey win because look at what he scored with nobody out, probably, you know?
Question is, though, I wonder, is there any space left to be a quote-unquote free surfer in terms of, like, what does Mikey do? Mikey can put out a video, you know, or a clip or a film. Does anybody care? Would you watch the Mikey Wright signature film?
Yeah, I would. Maybe not a full length one, but if Mikey's pumping out content every 3 months, you know, 5 to 7 minute clips every 3 months, I'm very interested what he's up to. He's a great surfer.
Okay. So that's what a Mikey Wright is going to have to do. So I think the up and coming people surfers deciding between tour surfing and or, you know, free surfing, for lack of a better word, have to decide what's a worse job or what is more annoying, following tour or pumping out content nonstop, because that's what you're gonna have to do to stay relevant to a brand. Mikey's gonna have to have robust social engagement on his channels, you know, all these buzzwords. Like no brand, like they used to happily pay, I feel, some dude just to be that dude, right?
Yeah.
He didn't have to go do anything. Didn't have to social stuff, didn't have to give interviews. You just had to be sort of in the public mind, and that would bring value to the brand. Now brands are going to say, no, how do you, you know, so if you're not on tour, you better pump content. If you're not pumping content, you ain't getting paid.
Well, I think pumping out content like the way that Jamie O'Brien does is an absolute slog. And sure. So if you're not really built for that, there's going to be no way to fake it. There's going to be no way, because you have to be on 24/7 and filming everything. So if you're not that personality type, then don't do it. But there is kind of an in-between, which is the drop a clip every 3 months. And you're probably not going to make as much as Jamie O'Brien, because you're not going to have the YouTube views, but you can still find a company, the right companies, to support that sort of an endeavor. I think ultimately the decision has to come from the surfer. If you're that talented, you have to figure out what is going to help you excel in your talent and help you grow as a surfer the most. And if the competitive path is going to bring out the best in you, then probably pursue that. And that's where you will thrive. I think Mikey Wright has identified that the competition is actually regressing his surfing and limiting his surfing. And if he were to spend 5 to 7 years on tour, he'll be a worse surfer at the end of that time period than if he was just on the road. And so all he has to do is convince Quiksilver that that's true. And I think that they already understand that and they can get behind that.
I just wonder though, if, you know, not that surfers are worth millions of dollars a year or over $1 million a year, but how do you, the next Mikey Wright, the upcoming Mikey Wright, how do you retire? There's going to be no such thing as a pro surfer that can, you know, retire as a surfer anymore. Like, you know, and maybe people would argue that that's way better, right? That the Mikey Wrights of the world will actually have to work jobs and then also do content.
Yeah. Lori Towner.
Like,
you know,
yeah, like where your surfing kind of supplements your other job.
Right. I think that makes you a better surfer. One thing that needs to be said, I think, about both Jeremy Flores and Mikey Wright is this is the departure of personality on tour. Like, seeing Jeremy go is sad, because now who's going to speak their mind? Who's going to remind, who's going to be the voice of us viewers? For Jeremy Flores to stand on the beach breaks in Australia this year and at Surf Ranch previously and be like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I signed up for the Dream Tour. This is not the Dream Tour. And like you said, it's very hard to be motivated to surf beach breaks. And especially when my family's at home. So this is kind of a joke. I think he actually said this is a joke. So who's going to be our voice on tour this next year?
The problem coming up is the batch of surfers who didn't need the WSL, who are already financially set outside of the WSL, is the one leaving. The surfers who are staying are the ones who are dependent financially upon, you know, that's their paycheck. And so you can't go bite the hand that feeds at that point. And nobody. And I mean, I'd argue that Mikey Wright was a total media creation, or he was created as, you know, the rock and roll bogan for, I don't know that that's really him, right? And so I don't care about him going. I think his personality was artificial or could be argued. I don't know him personally, so can't say one way or the other, but he looks fake to me.
Yeah.
That Flores, though, and these guys, you could say exactly, even Julian Wilson, for pity's sake, as sort of milquetoast as he is, he did not need the WSL. The WSL sort of needed him, so he could say what he wanted anytime.
Yeah,
which that all goes away. It's going to be more wall of positive noise.
I know, it's disappointing. So you will be missed, Jeremy, for that, not for your Very surfing, much. But for your personality. One thing that you're missing on the Mexico event is this might be the best slate of commentators we've ever had.
Yep.
Have you caught that, or is anybody talking about that on Beach Grit?
I haven't heard people talk or haven't read any comments about it, but I listened yesterday briefly to, I think it was Cote, and who's the Mexican dude?
Kale Carranza.
Yeah, he was great. Where'd he come from?
So Kale is long time. I mean, he's former pro. He's been in Mexico, living in Mexico for, I mean, his whole life. But he was getting some coverage, I think, in the 90s and the 2000s. But so... they've got Kale Carranza. They've got Mitchell Salazar, who I think he's Mexican descent, but he lives in Southern California. So I think what happens often, or a problem in the past, when the WSL tries to offer like a cultural commentator who knows more about the local region, like in Rottnest, they had Dr. Lenny on. That was not a full-time commentator. He was
highlight.
It was a highlight because of the context that he provides, but he doesn't know much about surfing, you know? So I think the real strength here with this event is that these guys are providing the same excellent social context, cultural context, but also they're super savvy and knowledgeable about surfing. I mean, these guys are as sharp with statistics as Joe Turpel is. And they're also really well-spoken. It seems like they've probably been doing commentating in the past because they're not shy on the mic at all. Very comfortable, educated, and a totally fresh take.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. And like, it's funny, when Joe, is Joe there or no?
Yes.
Okay, I heard, so I caught a bit of Joe yesterday. He said something in the classic, like somehow stifling laugh, Joe Turpel voice, where I don't know what he thought was funny, but you know when Joe says something like serious and it sounds like he's laughing?
Yeah.
Or says something normal and it sounds like he's just about to break out laughing?
Yeah.
It was so annoying to me where I was like, why? I mean, maybe the nicest man ever, but why do they keep rolling him out? Like,
yeah.
I don't know what he provides anymore. Like, he's the voice of the WSL, which is a weird thing to want.
Well, one thing that was really kind of nice was Mitchell Salazar was actually providing something other than pure positivity. He said there was a couple of moments that I caught. One of them was with, I want to say Chris Cote. It might have been Turpel, I forget exactly, but he said that Italo made an excuse at Surf Ranch. He goes, look, I don't know if this is out of line to say, but at Surf Ranch, Italo complained that he had been on the road for 4 months. And, you know, suck it up, basically. Like, that's not an excuse. Buck up and win the event. You know, that's an event that Gabriel's constantly won. Now Felipe's winning one. And Italo needs to really like step up and not be complaining about time on the road. This is your job. And then Cote backed him off of it. He's like, well, you know, I think he was speaking for, he was being the voice of the people. Everybody was tired. So it's an understandable sentiment. And then Mitch kind of backed off because maybe he felt bad. And then in the post show, he said something similar and Kaipo took the opposite stance and Kaipo was trying to kind of talk Mitchell down and Mitchell actually backed off because I think he felt he had a point to make, but he felt insecure in making his point. So he just backed off. But as the viewer, I just thought, Mitchell, double down, go double at Kaipo, down. Take yeah. Kaipo's jugular, you know, because this is exactly
right now.
This yeah. is fresh. This is exactly what we need. And you have a great point. And it might not even be right, but you have a great point. So just argue it, you know?
Completely, completely. Like, I think that the staff that is at the WSL, and they continually say, right, like, you know, when you talk to Kaipo or Chris or any of these guys, they're like, we get no directive from the WSL.
Right.
But very clearly, they feel something. And they feel that you need to perpetually drive toward positivity. Where if you got a Salazar or anybody in there really doing the same for truth and honesty and what the viewer is seeing, then that person should, they should empower that person to double down and let Cote and, you know, whoever argue the positive side.
I feel like the problem, my assessment of the reason why that problem exists is that those commentators want to be friends with the athletes. And
yeah.
Traditionally, I think that's been the problem. And I remember this feeling this way, like with the Ashton Goggins, like debacle between you and him and kind of assessing his work and what he's been doing. It's like, there's a limitation to his work because he wants to be bro down with all those guys so much, you know? And that's fine. It's great. Like, he's living an amazing lifestyle and he gets to spend time on the road surfing with all these idols. That's fine. But there's a limitation to the work if you're not going to kind of call a spade or be critical of those people.
Completely. I mean, and I think in the case of Kaipo and Cote particularly, they're just really nice guys. They're like properly nice guys. And yeah. maybe you shouldn't. And I'm sure Turpel is a real, I mean, I've only ever heard that Turpel is such a nice guy, right?
Yeah.
Maybe nice guys don't pick the best commentator.
Right. Or you need one of them.
You need to balance. Yeah. You need one nice guy and one guy who's not so nice.
Totally. You don't need an entire team of them.
Nice.
One or two other things I'll mention. I know we got to go. Do you have to get off at 9:30 or 9:45?
9:45.
Okay. Two other things from the Mexico event. Tyler Wright is proving my prophecy correct.
So true.
She just lost to Isabella Nichols this morning.
Buckled, and she's out, right?
She's out of the event.
You called it start of the year that carrying the mantle for social change, for big divisive issues, was going to crumble Tyler Wright. What place is she in the world right now?
I haven't looked.
But not good. Did not look good for her.
I don't know, but she, interestingly, she lost to Isabella Nichols. You know, that's a proper upset.
Yeah.
So she is currently seventh, and I feel like this loss will actually bump her down because Isabella is going to jump.
And so she will not make it into the five woman final.
Apparently not.
I mean, she won't. Loss. She can't. That's over. Yep. If she's seventh and she just lost, then it's out.
Yep.
So yeah.
There's a consequence that comes with trying to step in front of the limelight, unfortunately.
The weird thing about her, though, is she hasn't done anything since those first kind of initial take the knee for the Aboriginals and all that. Like, she hasn't been upfront about any other issue since then, has she?
No, she's been pretty quiet, it seems, yeah.
Yeah.
She's carrying the weight. So the other thing about this event is the novelty mustaches.
Oh, man. Thinking novelty mustaches, making it a shave again.
Is it cultural appropriation to show up in Mexico and immediately grow the traditional stash?
Oh my goodness. It's so, I did not even think of it that way because I was so mostly fixated on Felipe Toledo's, who's the dude in Zoolander?
Mugatu.
Mugatu. Felipe Toledo's Mugatu really stole all my eyes. But you're exactly right. They're culturally appropriating the standard cholo stash.
Yep. So I think Gabriel needs
Bobby
to be canceled
Martinez
for that.
Furious. Yeah, I mean, exactly. Gabriel definitely does. The only person who doesn't, I suppose, is Felice, who just culturally appropriated a weird Scandinavian mustache.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that in Barrel or Nah, so prepare yourself. Should we go to the listener line?
Let's do it.
It's me.
Hello, David and Chaz. This is Mark from Oahu. I just had a quick question. Is it odd that there's no, like, celebratory parade for Carissa Moore? I mean, she did win the first Olympic gold medal in surfing, and she represents Oahu. Just curious your thoughts. Have a good day, guys. Thanks a lot. Hopefully I'll be drinking when I watch this.
She's their four-time world champ and winning gold medal.
I can't speak for Oahu in particular. They totally should have, because I don't think that Oahu is treating Chris Moore's victory as anything other than a crowning achievement, which it was, right? But I think not to the degree that they did for
John Florence when he won a world title.
Well, I mean, precisely, I don't get it. Like the call really did make me think. Like, I see WSL, I think, is only ever greenwashing, social washing, whatever, right? They only need the appearance of caring, but Oahu actually cares. And
yeah,
Carissa, you know, she's no more or less Hawaiian than John, but theoretically she's more Hawaiian. I mean, in terms of what matters, right? Like,
yeah,
the actual Hawaiian blood and all that. I don't get it. First ever gold medal in surfing. Yeah, I don't know why they didn't have a big old parade right through Waikiki.
Maybe is it COVID? It could have been, actually.
Do they not want a big old get-together?
I don't know, but part of me is anti any celebration. You know, like, I don't want to go to a parade. I don't need a day. I don't need, like, a national coffee day followed by national donut day followed by national stepfather day. Like, the calendar is full of stupid days that nobody needs to acknowledge. But this is a real opportunity where Carissa, they could have deemed something. This is Carissa's day, and certainly a celebration for when she comes home. And here's why. The reason why I'm against all of those things is because I'm cynical and I live in Southern California and I sit in traffic and I have to deal with crowds and all that sort of stuff. Oahu, Hawaii in general, and the culture is all about family. It's all about ohana. And the fact that this is like an indicator that they're becoming a little more cynical, a little more westernized, and I don't like it. I think they need to double down on the ohana sentiment. And this was the ultimate opportunity to celebrate. Not enough is made about Carissa's dominance, four-time world champ. And by the way, coming along at a young age and dethroning Stephanie Gilmore. I mean, Stephanie's got seven, but Carissa fully upended that reign of dominance and is now and still battling it out with her, with Tyler, with all of the other up-and-comers, and then gold medaling on top of it. It's incredible.
I hear you. Is it possible that Carissa did not go home to Oahu after Japan? Do you think she came, had to go basically straight to Mexico?
I think she did go home.
Yeah. I don't know. Missed opportunity, especially Carissa's from Honolulu too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's particularly a missed opportunity for town, I think, to really, you know, John belongs to the North Shore.
Yes.
Carissa is town surfer. And so I'm sure she already has the keys to the city and all that, but maybe there is a Carissa Moore day. Maybe they've already done everything.
They haven't. Mark lives on Oahu and he's speaking from, I'm trusting that he is speaking from knowing those things.
Missed opportunity.
Hawaii ought not lose their festiveness. You know, like they're a celebratory people. They support their own, all of that family. They ought not lose that. You know?
You should have thrown a big luau, giant luau for Carissa Moore. Yeah, missed
out. I feel like in the way that like Australia gets behind their athletes, Mick Fanning, you know, or Brazil gets behind Gabriel Medina, now Italo, that this is Carissa, not enough is made about Carissa's dominance.
It's true. Sexist.
All right. Listener line, we're going to keep it short. We have other calls, but I'm going to save them for next week. But if you want to call, the number is 760-237-0150. SurfSplendorPodcast.com. Go to the contact page and you can find the number there as well. In case you're driving and you don't want to pull out a pen and write that down and potentially crash your car.
Okay. So no one's answering. Well, can't you just let it ring a little longer?
So call in with any thoughts. They don't even have to be surfing related. They could be anything. Existential quandaries, comments about Chaz's work schedule, whatever.
Yeah, anything at all. Speaking of Hawaiian culture and heritage, have you started watching The White Orchid on HBO?
White Lotus.
The White Lotus, sorry.
It is the best.
I'm obsessed. So strange. Yeah, it's really good. I've been, it's so odd. It is an odd show.
It's, first of all, I love Mike White.
Yeah, Mike White is phenomenal.
This is possibly the best Mike White I've ever seen.
I mean, the best part is it's so, like, seeing something that surprises anymore, like a storyline that's not ham-fisted or, you know, not that it's ham-fisted, but like you just know all the beats, right? They're telling a traditional story in a traditional way. This is neither traditional story nor traditional way. And I'm very curious how they even got this thing made.
So I agree with all of that. And one thing that I love about it is every single scene creates tension and it's so tense. Even episode one, there's so much tension. You're like, how do they ratchet up the tension from here? And there's so many different character dynamics happening. So they'll switch to a new character duo, you know, the plastic surgery lady and her healer, her spiritual healer, black lady, who's trying to get the business going. They switch to that. And it's such a weird dynamic. And you're just like, what is this power struggle happening here? And they ratchet it up. She's going for this. And then she just wants the friendship because she needs validation. And then they switch to the concierge and the dad who have some weird sexual tension. And you're like, whoa, this is equally as weird. The dynamic's crazy. And they're ratcheting up the tension there. And now it's just at a fever pitch.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, if two listeners who have HBO, it takes a minute, like give it like three episodes before.
No, episode one for me, I was hooked.
Me too. I've watched them all. But yeah, like it is an interesting show. I love interesting in this day and age.
So in episode one, the opening scene, obviously the honeymooners, the honeymooner dude is sitting there by himself.
How good is that guy?
He's so good. Did you ever see Obvious Child? That rom-com with Jenny Slate?
Is he in it?
It's the funniest movie that's ever been made about abortion. No joke. It's a rom-com about abortion. So if that's not your taste, don't watch it. But it's really, really good. And he is the love interest in that. That's where I first saw him. I'll send that to you when we get off. So you can watch it.
Perfect.
He's really good.
Perfect in this movie.
So the opening scene where there's a body being moved onto the plane and it's identified that that person died at the White Lotus, I just presumed it was his fiance, which it still could be, we don't know. But I finally realized this past episode, they never said it was his fiance. They could have just left the island separately because let's say maybe they're not going to end up staying married together. So maybe
doesn't he say it's my wife?
I don't think he does.
I think he says, that's my wife, and then gets up and puts his glasses on and walks away. We have to go back.
I think he just tells those people to F off. They're like, oh, I heard a body died there, you know, or somebody died there. Did that happen? I think he just says F off.
Okay. I'm going back to watch. Going back in.
So this entire five episodes or whatever, I was trying to figure out who the killer would be of his wife. But now I'm realizing, no, any of them could have been the one who dies. We don't know who the killer is. We don't even know who the victim is.
He doesn't say that's my wife?
I'm 90% sure he doesn't.
Okay. I mean, I trust your memory over mine, to be honest.
So it could be that the mom gets killed by the friend who's, or the friends get in a fight and kill, or, you know, like any of them could be the victim. The concierge could be the one who gets killed.
How many episodes are you in?
Up to date.
Oh, okay. I must be too.
I'm current. Waiting for Sunday night so we can watch the next one. All right. Let's go to commercial break and then let's come back with Barrel or Not.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Chaz, barrel or nah? I'm realizing, I know it is. It's everybody's favorite segment. We need a music, I think, intro, outro for barrel or nah. I should probably get working on that.
We should, I was thinking too, we should do a, maybe next episode, we should do a full episode of barrel or nah.
Just start. We should. We should even have the listeners call them in, maybe.
Yeah, that's what we should do.
So, by the way, speaking of music, intro, outro music, the outro music for the listener line is ELO. ELO.
Oh.
I never realized the connection.
Orchestra. Yeah. It's music that is so representative of him too, as a person.
It really is.
Like, it is a perfect sonic embodiment of Eric Logan.
Totally. Totally.
Powerful.
Yeah. Powerful. Okay. So sometimes the universe just aligns. It's kismet, you know?
It is.
So one thing that I was going to say about barrel or not is I'm getting a lot of submissions from listeners of things that we have covered in the past, but I'm talking 3 years ago. So I don't think the listeners maybe were around 3 years ago. So we need to decide, do we want to revisit old barrel or nahs?
I think so, because time change, people change, you know, it's sometimes important on essential issues too. Let's revisit. If a thing is no barrel 3 years ago and it's still no barrel today, then that's proper no barrel.
Okay. Among the things, we won't address them today. Maybe we'll put them in the full show of Barrel or Nahs, but among the things that people have submitted the last week or two, front traction pads, white wetsuits, holding your wax either in against your body or out away from your body, booties with board shorts. So,
okay, so
we'll address those later. Don't do them now.
Okay.
No, save them. Because I've got proper ones. Okay, barrel or nah for today's show. Collecting swords.
Didn't we do this one too?
Oh, did we?
We sure did.
Somebody sent me a meme and said, why are swords so much cooler than knives? But knife guys are so much cooler than sword guys.
Yeah, so we did this, and I think you categorized as people who collect swords as serial killers or something. You or child molesters or something. You really damned people who have swords. Yeah.
That doesn't sound like
a bad thing. And I think I gave a barrel on the sword because I do have a sword or two laying around the house.
Okay, man, my memory's awful.
Yeah, swords. I mean, the listeners.
When I was
you really damned the sword.
Yeah, I stand by that. It is, and it's not that I even have a stance on swords. It's just everybody I've ever witnessed who was like really into swords was very, very weird. There's not a lot of casual sword collectors like yourself.
I'm a casual sword collector.
Yeah, yeah, there's a devout sword collector.
I casually have a sword in my house.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
So barrel.
The other thing that I was thinking about was when I was a kid, nunchucks seem to be a lot more popular than they are now.
Nunchucks, throwing stars, and also butterfly knives. All three were more popular than they are
that's
now.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
All three, like, remember the switchblades? Kids with a switchblade comb? Like, all kind of alternative cutting craft was more, I mean, which I suppose we could switch this barrel or not to alternative cutting craft.
True.
Which, alternative cutting craft. Yeah, I mean, but you know the kids with the switchblade, right?
Yeah.
Who push the button and out it pops, who go to Mexico and get their switchblade, and then the spring breaks after like four pushes, and then you're stuck with a floppy blade.
What did we think we were going to encounter? Why did I, as a kid, need a pen that pulled apart into a knife? And also with alternative cutting crafts, they're terribly not functional. Like that knife... that pen would have slipped so easily. And especially if there was blood involved, blood is viscous. Like I would have slipped and sliced my hand on the blade.
Not only, but
one of those penknives too, imagine you're getting attacked by a rage-filled guy. You stab him with that penknife, that's only going to make him angry. Like, for that's sure. going to do no damage. Like, unless you're, like, really hitting his eyeball or maybe his jugular, which
right.
with your slippery little penknife, it's going to be pretty rough. But if you stab him in the chest or something, it does not even slow his roll.
Not even. And the other problem is, upon the onslaught of his attack, if I have to whip out my attaché case, open it up to access my pen, be like, hold on, good sir.
Yeah.
Let me open this up, grab my pen, pull it apart. Yeah. Like, it's not a very effective attack.
Nope. All those alternative craft. I mean, I think you could really whale somebody with a nunchuck. You could probably really crack a skull with one of those. But aside from that, switchblade too, you could probably do some serious damage. Butterfly knife, you're going to cut your finger off.
Perhaps the lowliest of all of those is the throwing star, because the throwing star only sticks in the skin. It doesn't actually like penetrate the body. It doesn't penetrate and go in. It doesn't ever go through a body like a bullet would.
No.
It's at best just going to get lodged in muscle.
It aggravates. It's the throwing star. It's an annoyance. It's there to annoy.
It's the equivalent of a pellet gun, essentially.
Yeah.
The other thing that I feel like maybe we have talked about, but we could talk about it every week because it always infuriates me in movies, is throwing stars in movies that, like a James Bond movie, let's say, it debilitates the bad guy and he falls silently. So James Bond will be entering the evil whoever's lair, and the guard will be standing there with a machine gun. He'll get a throwing star to the neck and silently fall to his death.
Yep.
If I got hit with a throwing star, it doesn't matter where in my body, I am going to scream at the top of my lungs. It'll be the loudest of all deaths, you know, like, but in movies and arrows back in like the Robin Hood style movies, somebody would get an arrow to the back and instantly slump over and die. No, you're gonna be like, somebody shot me with an arrow, and then slowly
imagine how much it would hurt to get shot with an arrow in the back.
Right.
Ouch.
And yet every movie where anybody's ever been shot by an arrow or hit by a throwing star quietly dies.
We should go back in and digitally remaster all those and put the correct sound effect in.
And they should all be our screams. So it'll just be our screaming in every film. Doesn't matter if it's a 200-pound dude, 80-pound woman, like, it's our screams.
That's good. Barrel.
Yeah. Okay, barrel. Barrel or nah, commentators rhyming their amplifiers. You're going to need to risk it for the biscuit was one of them out of this CT event.
Depends on who says it. I'll say I like my Strider Wazalewski to rhyme his amplifiers. I'll say I don't like my Cote to do it.
Cote's a big advocate of it, and he uses a lot of music or lyrics too, song lyrics.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of when Cote does it for some reason. Nothing against Cote, nothing against the way Cote announces, except for that part. But I do love it when Strider Raspberry Wazalewski bust out a rhyming amplifier.
See, I'm for it, but I think that they need to be good. You know, like
risk it for some, the biscuit, like, is not good.
No, it's not good at all. Like, but it's terrible actually. Like, they need to actually, like, a joke needs to, yeah. Anything can be funny if it's, or any, you know, nothing is off limits if it's funny in terms of comedy. And I feel like there's real opportunity here to like cement your legacy as a commentator by creating some really memorable ones, and Risk It for the Biscuit is not memorable.
Well, I mean, you remembered it.
Only because a listener sent it in and I copy and pasted it into my notes so that we'd have something to talk about.
Okay, well. Risk It for the Biscuit, bad.
Bad, barrel, not barrel, but.
Not barrel.
In general, rhyming.
In general. Yeah, barrel.
There's a real opportunity here.
I mean, yes, for Strider Raspberry.
To cement his legacy. Okay, yeah. Barrel or nah, bleaching your facial hair.
So nah. I mean, one look at Philippe, it's an absolute joke, right? Like, there's no way you can pull that off with any kind of dignity, where, not that I need everyone to be dignified, but you need some shred of dignity
And I feel bleaching your facial hair literally strips your last shred of dignity.
So my question too is, was Felipe copying A, like Italo Ferreira went for a look, you know, by yeah. he did the bleached braids previously. Yep. Then the braids disappeared and he did bleached hair, but he's winning events. He's winning, like he's really going for a look that feels sincere. And it's hard to argue with him because he's just crushing things.
He's winning.
For Felipe to come and do it kind of after the fact, a lesser version and doing lesser surfing. So is he A, just copying the guy who's doing it first and better, or is he B, copying Jonah Hill?
Ooh, he might be is there just a bleach thing happening around, like, is bleach back fully trending? And so they're all just riding the train, the bleach train.
I don't think it's trending. I think one of them, there's only three people doing it. And I'm trying to figure out, I think Italo's at the top of the pyramid. And I think Jonah, who is the Val, is just clinging on to anything that is surf culture, you know? So he sees Italo as the guy and he's like, oh, like I want to be surfy. So boom, Jonah then bleaches. I think Felipe is caught in the middle going, oh, all these inputs around me are doing this thing. I want to be a part of it. You know what? They did the top of their head. I'm going to go for the facial hair.
That stands to reason right there. Does not look good. Like, I will say, I will argue that both Italo and Jonah looked pretty good with their various bleaches. Yeah. Philippe did not look good with his bleach.
Agreed. Felipe is not pulling it off.
Nope. No dignity, Philippe.
He's
no,
looking like a poser, too.
Looking like a clown. A poser clown.
A Mugatu clown. Mugatti's one of the better movie characters of all time.
It's really true.
All right, Chaz. Well, I know this is a slightly abbreviated show. You've got family obligations.
Sorry about it. I have to get my car to the shop. That's what I have to do. Not that cool.
That's a bummer. Then are we going to be back at Album next week?
We sure are.
Okay. You know, we haven't been hitting Athletic Greens hard enough. So we'll revisit that next week. But for all the listeners, athleticgreens.com/surf is our main sponsor and part of our daily life.
Best thing for you. Just had it an hour ago.
Perfect. athleticgreens.com/surf. Chaz, I appreciate you taking the time. Until next week.
Get bear.
And don't forget to post your job for free at linkedin.com/surf. That's linkedin.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.